Hello and welcome to Beyond Approach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tuxla Erzal.
I come to you from Pistoia, Italia, where I am recording on land belonging to Proto-Italians. Proto-Italians!
Italians.
No one can hear my hands move, but they're moving.
It's Proto-Italian.
I thought about that. That was my first thought. I'm like, no one's going to get it but Tux. But yeah, it's me.
Lots of people will get that.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. That movie's doing really well.
Go on.
That movie with the terrible Mario? Accent. Mario in his flat ass. That movie is blowing out the box office right now.
Wild.
It's the biggest.
People have no taste.
Thank you. People have no taste. It's the biggest opening since like before the pandemic. Like, it's stupid. Like,
really?
Yes.
That's bizarre.
What? Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
I am coming to you from the D.
No,
from
you're
Detroit,
not.
Michigan. where I record on land belonging to the Ottawa, Wyandotte, Potawatomi, and Ojibwe nations.
Wow, I can't believe you said the D. That was the most violent thing you've ever said to me. So this is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. We be drinking and we be swearing.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Get with it. The D.
Today we're drinking a cocktail called a Between the Sheets.
Oh. Oh my God.
Yes. unfortunately, my story today is from the 1980s again. And y'all know how much I hate cocktails from the 80s. They're just not, they're not good. They're not the one.
Yeah.
But thankfully, the recipe that we're drinking today was not actually invented in the 1980s. It was popular in the 80s, but it was created much earlier, which means it's probably going to taste good.
Earlier when they had taste.
Oddly enough, the origin story of the Between the Sheets has a lot of strange similarities to the origins of the cocktail we just had a couple weeks ago, the French 75. When I was doing the research for both these cocktails, I was like, really? So weird. Both cocktails are commonly attributed to Harry McElhoney from Harry's New York Bar in Paris. Both cocktails were more likely just popularized by him rather than being actually invented by him. And both cocktails had variations on the recipe where gin and cognac were sometimes swapped out for one another.
That is true. How bizarre. Did you find them like when you were researching one?
No, I completely just found them independently of one another. That's and then wild. Started doing the research and was like, what?
Wow.
Yeah.
Harry's like a black hole just grabbing you like,
totally.
Do this other drink that people say that it's mine.
Yeah. I think the real issue here is that he was just a black hole gobbling up cocktail recipes and claiming them for his own.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So unlike the French 75, though, the cognac won out the popularity contest in this recipe. And the modern standard version of the Between the Sheets that we are drinking today calls for cognac, light or white rum, triple sec, and lemon juice. It's a very strong cocktail. It's like pretty much all spirits.
Yeah.
So sex.
Okay.
You know, am I right?
So sex. Am I right? Yes, you are right. You are correct.
Yes.
Affirmative.
Exactly, yeah. So Harry from Harry's New York Bar is often given credit for inventing a whole slew of classic cocktails like the French 75, the White Lady, the Old Pal, the Monkey Gland, the
Bloody Mary, and the
Sidecar. Yes. Just to name a few. However, the funny thing is that we have had several of these cocktails on the show before, and Harry McElhoney has not really come up in any of my research for any of these cocktails.
Harry be lying.
So it's really more likely that rather than inventing them, his bar, because his bar was so
popular,
big and so popular and so famous.
Totally.
That like, because these cocktails were on the menu at Harry's Bar, that everyone thinks like, oh, they were invented at Harry's Bar. Probably because they were the first, that was like the first time somebody had this, these recipes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they were invented there.
No, it does not.
Yeah. Either way, the modern version of the Between the Sheets is basically just a twist on a classic sidecar. If you eliminate the sugared rim and add white rum, boom, you have a Between the Sheets. As I have mentioned before, a lot of older recipes for the Between the Sheets actually call for gin rather than brandy, though. Some cocktail historians believe that the more likely origin story of the Between the Sheets is that it was invented in the United States sometime during Prohibition as a gin-based cocktail, but that when Harry's Bar heard about the recipe, they switched the gin for cognac to make it smoother and more elegant. Elegante.
Yes.
But either way, the cognac and rum-based version from Harry's Bar is the one that really took off and really became popular. This is the recipe that we're drinking today. That's probably why people think of it as a cocktail from Harry's Bar, even though it's not.
It's not, yeah.
So it did very well, you know, in the 20s and 30s, going up, you know, going on into the years. It did very well for a very long time, but eventually it sort of like fell off. People got, you know, didn't care about it anymore, faded into the background. But then in the 1980s, Americans who were obsessed with any cocktail with a sexual innuendo in the name decided it was time to bring back the Between the Sheets. Yes. Literally, I really think that it's only because it's called the Between the Sheets.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we got to start making this. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the era for the sexy cocktail.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Cocaine,
sex on the
man.
Beach, slippery nipple, buttery nipple. Slow, comfortable screw. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Men need to be stopped.
Exactly. Yeah. So it appears, this cocktail, Between the Sheets, appears on multiple lists of the most popular cocktails of the 1980s, despite the fact that it is much, much older. Mm. But yeah, I'm glad that it was not invented in the 80s because it would be gross if it had that.
A kamikaze was okay.
Yes, the kamikaze. But also, I don't think the kamikaze was invented in the 80s either. It was a little earlier.
Damn,
yeah.
Okay. Fair.
It wasn't as old as this because vodka wasn't really popular.
Yeah.
Very early, but are we going to say that you're not drinking this?
Yeah. We can say that when I'm not drinking it.
Yeah. So, we're going to take a taste, but really it's just going to be me taking a taste.
Yeah. You guys, today is a holiday in Italy and I was not aware of that until I went out to the bar seeking cocktails. So I wasn't able to find cognac. Everything else I could have got, but cognac is not very popular here in Italy. So I am drinking a Tom Collins right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you had all the stuff from the last cocktail that we made. But yeah, I'm going to give it a taste here. So
we can still cheers. I'm still drinking.
Cheers, yeah.
Yeah, cheers. Oh, so good.
Hmm. So it's good. It's very strong. It's very spirit forward. I mean, it's all liquor.
Yeah.
There's 3 ounces of alcohol to 1/2 of an ounce of lemon juice.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, Cointreau is like a liqueur, but it's all spirits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good though. It's very like smooth and pleasant. The flavor is lovely, but it is very strong. For people who don't appreciate a strong cocktail, you might not like this. But I think it's great. I love the rum and the cognac mixed together is a really interesting flavor.
Oh, I love rum. The warmth of it.
Yeah.
The spice.
So I guess we're going to just dive right in.
Do it. 1, 2, 3, go.
When I was a kid at school, learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
So normally I really like to talk about Ronald Reagan in my final story of the season. this is how I like to wrap up every season of the show, talking about Reagan. But I've decided that this year and probably going forward, I'm going to start doing things a little bit differently. Since Pride is in June, I've decided I don't want to have to think about Ronald fucking Reagan every June. Fuck that shit. F that S.
F that S.
Yeah. I fuck that man forever. But yeah, so from now on, I think I'm, you know, obviously I'm still going to want to talk about this asshole at least once a season, but I'm not going to be doing it in June.
Yeah, we can piss on his grave any other month.
Any time of day or night or year or whatever. Yeah, every season is, yeah, it's always pissing on Ronald Reagan's grave season.
Truly, yes.
But yeah, so you've probably guessed by now that I am going to be doing my Ronald Reagan story for the season today. Like a lot of Reagan stories that I've done before, this story is really more about the people in his inner circle, the people he paid to be around him, rather than it is, I mean, his staff is what I should say.
Okay, I'm like, he has to buy friends because he sucks.
No.
That's true.
Yeah. It's not exactly about him directly, but that's really just because he was always really, really good at making some seriously dastardly shit happen without ever getting his own hands dirty. He always had people doing shit for him so that he could always stay one step removed from whatever happened just in case.
I mean, I saw him in those Red Scare videos recently, spilling all the tea, doing his own dirty work, ratting on his friends.
He probably, I don't know, some of it he probably didn't think was a problem.
Yeah.
Somehow, I don't know. But yeah, let's dive into this little scandal. Do you know what the term October surprise means? I'm sure you've heard this before.
I have heard it. I think it's like when you think someone's about to win an election and they don't, right? Or something bad happens and it like derails the momentum or something. Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be something bad.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on which campaign you're a part of.
Yeah.
But basically it means like an unexpected and game-changing event in the month just before an election that can potentially affect the outcome of that election in a significant way. So like it could be something great potentially, but like that could still be bad for the other candidate.
Mm.
You know, it can also sometimes just be like the other candidate found some dirt and spilled some tea that nobody expected to be spilled. So today I'm going to be talking about an October surprise that might have been but never was. In the months leading up to the election of 1980, President Jimmy Carter knew that his reputation was struggling because of the energy crisis, the stalling American economy, and a hostage crisis in Iran that had been going on for almost a full year. He hoped that he was going to be able to negotiate for the release of these hostages, which would, you know, it would be great because he would be doing his job as president, getting these hostages home, but it was also going to be really good for his reputation, too, and boost his chances in the election. But the negotiation stalled, and without the October surprise that he needed, Ronald Reagan won the election, and the rest is history. Really terrible, awful, horrible history. So when these hostages were released, almost immediately after Reagan's inauguration, some people began to suspect foul play. For over 40 years, the idea that somebody had intentionally delayed the release of these hostages for political gain was considered a baseless and cynical conspiracy theory. But earlier this year, some new tea was spilled that seemingly confirms what most people believed impossible until now.
Wow.
Yes.
That's wow. New lows achieved, unlocked.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Reagan, man. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's like, I'm almost impressed because that's like so bad. That's like,
it's so
you have to feel like you were doing bad things. Being like,
yes,
these people can stay away from their family, maybe even die because I want to win.
Yeah, exactly. Be tortured. Who cares?
Who cares? It's all
I
right.
I need to win this election.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would like to propose a toast, raise a glass. You are who you surround yourself with.
Cheers. I will drink to that. What a piece of shit. I mean, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna
all
try
right,
my
hold on to your butt.
I like that you just said butt singular. It's usually butts.
I know, just one butt.
I have three butts, okay. I will hold on to one of them as per instruction.
So in the 1970s, I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that. Why I said butt and not butts.
I mean, I love it. Gave me an opportunity to have three butts. So I'm very happy about this.
Oh, so in the 1970s, a lot of Iranians were really sick of the Iranian monarchy, and especially sick of the power that Western governments seemed to have over their Shah. In an effort to get rid of him, they turned to a high-ranking Islamic cleric named Ayatollah Khomeini.
Mm.
And long story short, I got to breeze through this because this is not the meat of the story today. Long story short, the Iranian Revolution. Yes, exactly. Yeah. The Iranian Revolution finally forced the Shah to disband his government and flee to Egypt at the beginning of 1979. The United States stayed out of the revolution. It's none of our business, even though we did consider the Shah an ally. We're like, no, no, no. That's their thing. But after the revolution, in October of 1979, President Carter agreed to allow the exiled Shah to come to the United States for treatment for advanced lymphoma. Not surprisingly, when Iranians found out about this, they were fucking pissed. You can't be fucking with this dude.
Why? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The exiled Shah that they just
got
rid of because,
yeah.
So on November 4th, 1979, just after the Shah arrived in New York, a group of pro-Ayatollah students broke into an American embassy in Tehran. They took 66 hostages, most of whom were diplomats or embassy employees. They quickly released 13 of them. Most of them were not U.S. citizens, or they were women or black Americans who Khomeini said
that.
Were.
Yeah. This is not your fight.
Khomeini literally said they were already subject to, quote, the oppression of American society.
Facts. I love him for having eyeballs.
So he's like, no, you can go home.
Yeah.
You're good.
You've been through enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Being sent home is torture enough for you.
Oh no, it's true. Oh man.
So eventually they released a 14th hostage because they had health problems, The remaining 52 hostages would be held captive in this embassy compound for over a year.
Wow.
During this time, they weren't allowed to speak or to read. They were barely allowed to even change their clothes.
They weren't allowed
to
speak?
That's what I read.
That's intense.
Exactly. They lived in constant fear. They were often taunted, blindfolded, and paraded in front of TV cameras or jeering anti-American crowds of Iranians who fucking hated them.
Of course.
They were never sure what their fate was going to be, whether they would be tortured or murdered, or if this was ever going to end for them. And the American people were equally worried about their fate. People tied yellow ribbons around trees in their honor, and every night on the news, every night on the news, Walter Cronkite tallied the days of their captivity every night. As the weeks turned into months, Americans blamed President Jimmy Carter for what they saw as inaction on this hostage crisis. Behind the scenes, Carter was doing basically everything in his power to try and get these Americans home.
Yeah.
He tried bargaining with the Ayatollah and the new Iranian government, but to no avail. Didn't really go very well. He tried economic sanctions and the seizure of Iranian assets in the United States. He even tried a military rescue mission called Operation Eagle Claw. But unfortunately, on the day of the mission, there was a huge, horrible sandstorm, and it caused several helicopters to malfunction, and 8 American servicemen were killed before they ever reached their target. The planes or the helicopters essentially just went down.
Fuck.
Because of all the sand. Yeah. As the months marched on, it became really clear that this hostage crisis was going to be a major issue for President Carter in the 1980 election. His inability to bring these hostages home made him look weak and ineffective as a leader. But also, he was so focused on finding a resolution and getting these people home that he often ignored the campaign trail during the election cycle.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Focusing on humans instead of just winning.
I know. Exactly.
And that is why he lost.
Exactly. Yep.
Damn.
Republicans knew full well that this hostage crisis was one of their best paths forward for winning this election in November.
That's so dirty.
I know.
Like, these are American citizens. You should pretend at least to care about them. Like, Benghazi.
Oh, they pretended.
Benghazi.
They pretended big.
Okay.
All the theatrics of their pretending. Yeah. They're like, oh, we're so concerned. And Jimmy Carter's just not doing anything about it.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay.
You know. Yeah. So Ronald Reagan took full advantage of Carter's difficulties. The Republicans knew that Carter was trying to negotiate with the Iranians for the release of these hostages. And they also knew that an October surprise, if he was able to bring them home, this was going to ruin their advantage in the polls. In Washington, rumors quickly started circling that Reagan's campaign staff was negotiating with the Iranians themselves.
I feel like you need to do a mini about, like, what are the most popular ones.
I don't actually have a mini lined up yet, so I think that's a good idea.
Because I'm super curious.
About other October surprises, yeah. But yeah, so in Washington, rumors started circulating that Reagan's campaign staff had started negotiating with the Iranians themselves, but in this case, to make sure that the hostages wouldn't be released, at least until after the election.
No. Yes.
These are just rumors, though. This is before the election. This is just a rumor. And then on election day, 1 year and 2 days after the hostage crisis began, Reagan defeated Carter in a landslide. Then on January 20th, 1981, just minutes, literal minutes after Ronald Reagan delivered his inaugural address. Why do I keep doing that?
Drugs.
Yes, that's what it is.
I love it. Alcohol?
Drugs and alcohol.
I was just about to say that.
Ruined my life. But yeah, so minutes after Reagan delivered his inaugural address, the remaining 52 hostages were released after 444 days.
Bruh.
Like, minutes.
That is so he gave suspicious.
He's like, I am now, like, president. And they're like, okay, I'm back.
I'm looking sideways at, like,
literally,
every single journalist in the country at the time.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a coincidence.
I mean, I'll get into some of the ways in which
this is crazy.
They were able to sort of explain away this coincidence. Yeah.
No.
But yeah, Republicans love to brag about this story as if the timing of the hostages' release makes their guy Reagan look like a legend. They're basically, like, the way they see it, Iran kept these hostages through the entire final year of the Carter administration because he was so weak and harmless as a leader that Iran thought they didn't have to listen to him. But then on the first day that Reagan was inaugurated, all he had to do, I know, it doesn't.
This is trash. This whole timeline, this whole, not even just the timeline.
Oh, literally.
This, like,
yeah.
This backstory.
This isn't really the backstory. This is sort of just like the yarn that they have spun since. This is like the narrative they like to talk about now. Multiple people used this. Yeah, exactly.
Still, this is not helping your
like,
mans.
Yeah. On the very same day that Reagan was inaugurated, all he had to do was give Iran a dirty look. And they quaked in fear of his macho toughness and announced they were going to release the hostages that very day. Republicans also claim that Carter's attempts to negotiate with Iran was the problem in the first place. On the campaign trail, Reagan refused to negotiate. And thanks to the timing of the release of the hostages, they say that this swinging dick tough guy act was all that was needed to scare Iran into giving in on the first day and sending the hostages home. Even if we ignore the new information that I'm going to be getting to in a little bit, after the break in a bit, what we already knew about the hostage negotiations before this new information came out completely contradicts this tough guy narrative and the idea that, like, just refusing to negotiate was what got them home. There's no truth in it at all whatsoever. None. Up until very recently, the common understanding of the end of this hostage crisis was that the reason the hostages were released at all is because Carter was laser focused on negotiating with the government of Iran. That even obviously, come on.
They're not just going to let them go. They've held them for a year.
Over a year. Yeah. They were in captivity for 444 days.
People are, I'm sorry.
I'm so dumb.
I'm so upset that people believe this.
Yes.
Like, oh, just one look at Reagan's dick.
But it's like people that, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you're like, ugh. I mean.
I love that. That's like your sound for a lot of things now. I'm sick bad. That's your sound for me when there's something in my eye. That's the sound for Reagan.
Yeah, so even after Carter lost the election in November, he still refused to give up on these hostages. Even though he knew he was not going to be president anymore, he worked until the very last day of his presidency as a lame duck. He's like, I'm not giving up on these fucking people. I'm getting them home. So he was working on a compromise with Iran until the very final moment. And because that's what a good president does. Like, he's... You know what I mean? Like, that's why he was elected to this office. That's what the office is for.
He feels responsible.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
For people.
Yeah. They're it wasn't about pawns. Politics. It wasn't about winning. It was about American lives and the well-being of these American citizens. So these secret negotiations that were going on behind the scenes between the Carter administration and the new government in Iran were really complicated. And really messy. There were a lot of different factions within Iran's new government. They hadn't really figured out how things were going to work on their own within their own stuff. So when it came to what to do with these hostages, it was like nobody could agree. Mm-hmm. So there were multiple occasions where the Carter administration thought that they had finally reached an agreement and everything was going to be great. And then only to see the deal completely fall apart at the last minute. But they kept at it. He kept going. And finally, on literally January 19th, 1981, the very last day of Carter's presidency, the U.S. and Iran signed the Algiers Accord, which secured the hostages' release in exchange for concessions by the United States.
Oh.
Yes. On the very last day of...
Why wasn't that publicized?
It was, but we have very short attention spans. Yeah. As for the weird coincidental timing of this agreement on the very last day of the Carter administration and the release of the hostages on the very first day of the Reagan administration, most people believed, or at least like people who understand politics and history and foreign affairs and that kind of thing, most people believed that the Iranians intentionally stalled these negotiations until the very end of Carter's presidency because they hated him. Because the Iranian people fucking hated President Carter. He was the president when the new government of Iran was formed.
I hate him too.
And he was also the president.
You're the face of this country. Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. He was the face of America. He was also the president who allowed their former Shah that they all hated to come to the United States for treatment for cancer, for lymphoma. Yeah. And they were like, fuck this fucking guy. No, we're not going to like let him... Like, make him look good. You know what I mean?
They didn't know Reagan and who they were making look good.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 They literally, they were like this fucking weird guy from Hollywood that used to be in movies and shit. Yeah.
He's the cowboy. We like him.
Exactly. Yeah. So the Iranian people basically viewed Carter as like the face of everything evil about America. In his book, Guests of the Ayatollah, author Mark Bowden wrote, quote, "The Iranians were deliberately stalling. They had decided to accept the deal and send the hostages home, But they had also decided to deny Carter the satisfaction of seeing it happen on his watch. So if this version of the story is to be believed, almost nothing. This has almost nothing to do with Reagan. Basically, yeah. Nothing at all to do with Reagan or his refusal to negotiate with a foreign power. Even though the hostages didn't come home while he was president, Carter deserves the credit for negotiating their release because he was the one who signed the Algiers Accord, not Reagan. Reagan wasn't there. Reagan's name is not on that piece of paper.
Reagan had better PR people.
Yeah.
Because he worked in Hollywood. Yeah,
exactly. For sure. I mean, and by that point, like, it was already too late. The election had already been lost. And
yeah.
Reagan was going to be president the next day, no matter what. So.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
But I think this is a good time for us to take a little break. Make some more cocktails if you need them. But we'll be RB.
Yeah, BRB.
Yes.
And it looks like we're live here.
I'm one of your hosts, Hamish.
And I'm your other host, Aaron Conway.
And welcome to our show,
The Third Wheel.
And today we're joined by...
Hello everyone, I'm Anna Blackburn.
I'm Josh.
My name's James.
Yes, I'm Nish.
My name's Naomi Josh.
I'm Gina.
Hi everyone.
I'm Lil.
This is Jakeshri.
I'm Tam.
Hi, I'm Deja.
I'm Nico.
I'm Ashley.
My name's Dar.
I'm Shami.
That's just a few of our previous guests. Every episode we're joined by a Third Wheel to hear their story, debate some juicy topics and play some games. You can find us everywhere at thirdwheel.fm and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Third Wheel FM.
Like, jumping on this podcast, The Third Wheel. Like, I love being The Third Wheel right now. Like, it's fantastic.
So we're back. Our wessels have been witted. What the fuck just came out of my mouth?
Our wessels have been witted. I love
our
it.
Our whistles have been wetted.
There we go.
Again, drugs and alcohol have ruined my life. What was
your
that?
Drink is very strong. I'm drinking like a...
I'm over here witting my wessel. So while this version of the story that I just kind of recounted is the widely accepted version and has been for years, the rumor that the Reagan team had worked to keep the hostages in Iran until after the election just wouldn't die. Reagan himself repeatedly had to deny these claims over the years.
I mean, it's suspicious.
It's very suspicious. Even if Iran hated Carter and didn't want to make him look good, why not release the hostages after the election was over?
Thank you.
Why wait until Reagan was president? You know what I mean?
The timing of it seems so... incorrect.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Not natural.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
This is you're setting a stage. You're telling me something with this release.
Yeah, exactly. So, rather than sort of just being like slowly forgotten as baseless gossip, this grew into like a full-on conspiracy theory over the years.
Okay.
In his book, October Surprise, Gary Sick, who had been Carter's chief aide on Iran during this hostage crisis, claimed that Reagan's campaign manager, William Casey, had reached out to the Iranians to ask them to delay the release of these hostages. In exchange for keeping these people in Iran until after Reagan took office.
No, what?
Sick claims that Reagan's team promised Iran to ignore Carter's arms embargo against them and to let them buy weapons through Israel once Reagan was in the White House. Like,
what?
Yeah. If you just hold on to these people for a little bit longer, you can have all the fucking guns and weapons that you want. Just hold tight. Mm. He also points to the convenient coincidence that Carter's negotiations with Iran.
They're not going to sell you weapons. Did they sell them weapons?
I don't know if it was Israel that was selling them exactly, but they were going through Israel, and they did get these weapons. It might have been us that was selling them. I feel like it's us that's selling them.
I don't think Israel. But they were going through Israel. Gideon. Okay.
And Israel knew that this was happening. Yeah.
I mean,
But yeah, so Sick in his book also points to this convenient coincidence that Carter's negotiations with Iran had repeatedly stalled out and repeatedly failed for over a year, when suddenly on January 15th, just like 4 days before he was no longer going to be president, Iran did an about-face and offered a series of concessions, which led to a final agreement in literally the last few hours of Jimmy Carter's presidency. And then, almost immediately after Reagan took office, arms began to flow into Iran in substantial quantities.
Stop it!
According to both Israeli and American former officials.
That's quid pro quo over there.
Imagine that, yeah.
Huh, that is so fucking cynical and awful, but wow, Reagan.
A former senior official in the Israeli Ministry of Defense told Sick that shipments by air and sea involved hundreds of millions of dollars worth of equipment, and that detailed lists of each shipment had been provided to senior officials in the Reagan administration.
Holy shit, wow.
Yes.
That is very damning.
In 1982, the Israeli ambassador to Washington told the Boston Globe that Israel's arms shipments to Iran were coordinated with the U.S. government, quote, at almost the highest of levels. We knew this shit in 1982. This was in the paper in 1982. And there's also the fact that during Reagan's second term, he was literally caught ignoring this arms embargo, the same embargo, and illegally selling arms to Iran. That's what the Iran-Contra affair is all about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Iran-Contra affair is going to have to wait for another day. I don't have time to get into the whole thing today. It's a scandal of its own. But literally, it's Reagan was selling arms to Iran. And he was caught. Everyone knew it. It was like the biggest scandal of his administration.
But he did it because he was... Yeah, you'll get into it.
I'm dancing around the Iran-Contra affair. I'm just sort of bringing that up as like, it's not unrealistic to think that he did this because he did it again.
He did it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though Sick had all of these mountains of evidence and testimony.
Where is the press? I mean, literally, it's like the New York Times, which is like, it was failing back then.
He had testimony from government officials, from intelligence operatives, from arms dealers, and from foreign leaders.
Yeah.
But the media and the government, they were like, nah, that's conspiracy theory. What are you talking about? Oh, don't take this guy seriously. This is a conspiracy theory. This didn't happen. It's nonsense.
Real conspiracies. Like, it's so upsetting. They happen all the time. But conspiracy theory just makes you look like sound like you have tinfoil on your head.
Exactly. Yeah. Just because it's just a theory at the moment doesn't mean that it's not necessarily true. I mean, a lot of times they aren't true, but that doesn't mean they never are.
Yeah. People do conspire to do things.
Exactly.
And they lie about it until there's proof.
Not the U.S. government.
Oh, no comment.
So the House and the Senate both launched separate investigation into these allegations, and they both ultimately rejected the claim, saying that there wasn't enough credible testimony or documentation to back the story up. But the story still just wouldn't go away. Over the years, several world leaders and foreign powers have echoed Gary Sick's claims that the Reagan team intentionally worked to delay the release of these American hostages.
So fucked up.
In 1991, the former Iranian president wrote in his memoir that Americans close to Reagan had proposed, quote, a secret agreement between leaders, and said in October of 1980 that everyone was openly discussing the agreement between the Americans on the Reagan team. He's like, no, this literally, like, Iran is not trying to pretend that this didn't happen. Literally, in the 90s, he's like, no, this fucking happened. He wrote it in his book. And everyone's like, la, 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 la. No.
La, la.
It's a conspiracy theory.
Jingle bells, Batman.
Exactly. Yes. Years later, he again repeated these claims, adding that he had been trying to come to a deal with President Carter in 1980, but Khomeini stopped him after making an arrangement with Reagan.
Wow.
He's like, no, don't make a deal with Reagan, or don't make a deal
with
Carter.
What a piece of shit.
I've already got this. In 1996, Yasser Arafat met with President Carter and reportedly told him, quote, "You should know that in 1980, the Republicans approached me with an arms deal if I could arrange to keep the hostages in Iran until after the election. I want you to know that I turned them down." Even Russian intelligence was saying, yeah, this was happening. Apparently, like, after the Soviet Union fell.
What is happening in this world? Like, everyone is being like, hey, look over here. We're like, come on.
No, it didn't. Come on. Yeah.
But also, no, just look over here. Like,
yeah,
because then you'll see like everyone else.
Yeah. When they were trying to do this investigation, the House and the Senate, when they were doing their investigation, it was right after the Soviet Union had fallen and the Russian government was trying to like buddy up to America at that point, very early on. And so when these committees reached out and they were like, hey, do you have any information on like, do you know anything? Are there any files from the Soviet Union that say like something might have happened? And Russia was like, yeah, there's plenty of files. We have the receipts.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been spying on y'all for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
All the Cold War. Y'all were doing it too. Yeah.
Yeah. They said that there were at least three separate meetings that they knew of between Reagan's campaign manager, William Casey, and representatives of Iranian leadership in 1980. At least three
in Europe.
I love
that they have the receipts. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, we were like, no, that didn't happen. This was like in the fucking subcommittee records, but when they released the report, that part was classified. And so the declassified
report
that came out did not include that information. For years, for 40 fucking years, this story has been ignored, downplayed, dismissed. Yeah. Didn't happen. But then, in March of this year, a well-respected former Texas politician named Ben Barnes told the failing New York Times that early in his career, he had actually been part of this campaign to keep the hostages in Iran. He's like 85 years old now.
Yeah, he's like, you can kill me. You can take me out. I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
But how did the New York Times treat this story? Because New York Times is so bad.
I mean, it's sort of like it was released as if it was sort of a bombshell, but like, I'll get into this a little bit more, okay. But it's sort of being treated like, isn't that interesting?
Oh, that is the spin always. Yeah. From the New York Times. Yeah, totally. Really makes you think or not think.
yeah.
Okay.
So Barnes claims that in 1980, a longtime political mentor of his, former Texas Governor John B. Connolly Jr., invited him on a secret mission to the Middle East. He says that he has kept this information a secret for almost 43 years. But after President Carter went into hospice care in February, Barnes decided that it was time to come clean. He says in this article, quote, "History needs to know that this happened. I think it's so significant, and I guess knowing that the end is near for President Carter put it on my mind more and more and more. I feel like we've just got to get it down some way."
Okay. Go off, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The bravery.
I know.
Whatever. Okay.
You're 85 years old. You don't have a career anymore.
Fuck off.
And Jimmy Carter, everyone is dead. Jimmy Carter's about to die.
Yeah. The bravery.
Really? He says that in 1980, he and Connolly traveled from one Middle Eastern capital to another to ask regional leaders with ties to the Iranian government to pass on a message from the United States. Don't release the hostages before the election. Mr. Reagan will win and will give you a better deal.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
But obviously that's what's happened.
Exactly.
Wow, that's so dark.
I know.
That he went tell your homie that like
we're gonna
help them out.
Yeah.
Ew.
And after they got back from this trip, Connolly and Barnes reported to Reagan's campaign manager, William Casey. They had a three-hour-long meeting in an airport lounge in Dallas to brief him about their trip. And according to Barnes, Casey wanted to know if, quote, they were going to hold the hostages. So the Times wrote in their piece that confirming Barnes's story has been incredibly difficult, considering over 40 years has passed since this happened, and most of the figures that are central to this story are already dead. Barnes has no diaries or memos to corroborate his account.
This is so cowardly. I'm sorry. This is like
I mean, I guess it's good in theory that it, like, he said it at all, but also, like, you're saying this when you know there's no consequences.
Yeah, and no one's going to be punished. So, like, oh, exactly. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. He doesn't have any, like, actual memos or anything to prove it, but he is considered a well-respected, high-profile career politician with no obvious motives to make the story up.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are trying to say, like, well, he doesn't have proof, it didn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Times was able to corroborate at least part of his story. Four prominent Texans have confirmed that Barnes had told them this story years earlier. One of these four Texas politicians is somebody who used to run the LA Times and was like a president at CNN. He was sitting on this information for years and was like, I don't know.
Okay, so fuck him, actually.
Yeah,
more
exactly.
Than,
yeah.
It's like you
but then
had...
the Times reached out and was like, Barnes said that you know about this. And he's like, yeah, I did. He told me years ago. Yeah, I knew this. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I hate so many people in this scandal.
I know. Yeah.
I hate them all.
Yeah, so there were various personal records that backed up Barnes' claims about his and Connolly's contact with the Reagan campaign and confirmed their meeting with Casey when they got back. And records also confirmed their travel dates and locations, proving
Damn.
That Barnes and Connolly had left Houston together in July of 1980, and they traveled to Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Israel before returning to Houston in August.
Wow, they did that shit. Okay.
So I've said this before already, but like over the past 40 years, Gary Sick has presented countless credible witnesses, including arms dealers, military personnel, and well-known foreign leaders that have all confirmed this story.
Yeah.
Time and time again.
No one is like
these witnesses.
Backtracked,
yeah.
Like, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like JK, LOL.
No.
Yeah.
All of these witnesses have been dismissed for being unimportant, untrustworthy.
Unimportant.
Well, like, they're like, oh, it's just like some random guy in the military. Like, who cares? This person wouldn't have the clearance or whatever. Or like the arms dealer, they're like, this is a shady character. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? Or even when fucking Yasser Arafat was like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Happened. How do you discount a leader?
American.
Oh, wow. Okay. But if he was American, I'd be like, oh, but he's wearing a turban, though. Like, let's be real.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it would be another hurdle.
But now they kind of like, they're like, oh, this guy is important, trustworthy, and American. An American politician with ties to multiple administrations and no clear motives to lie. And he's corroborating the story in the twilight of his life when, again, there's no motive to make this up.
I guess.
So what do you think we're
going to
do
about
it?
He should have come through like 20 years prior.
I know.
But
so what do you think we're going to do about it now?
Now that we found love, what are we going to do?
yeah.
Nothing.
Ding, 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 ding.
No. Okay. Are you serious? I was being cynical.
No, we're doing nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing at all. Members of the United States government, elected officials sworn to serve the American people, worked to sabotage a sitting president by intentionally campaigning to keep 52 American citizens in captivity in an enemy nation.
I'm like so disillusioned right now. Because it's like, we have this thing. We have evidence. I mean, it's not 100%, but it's like 99.9%.
Exactly. And there's
why
just
would this old
so
man lie?
Much. Yeah, and it's not just him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So I mean, yeah. All of the Middle East being like, "Hey, sir, like, just so you know, like, he talked to all of us and inspired to say, like, hold your citizens longer so I can win." Mm-hmm. Just wanted you to know. Yeah.
But, yeah, and we'll sell you some guns.
They were all wearing turbans, so.
Exactly. They can't be trusted. They're not worth even listening to.
I rest my case.
Look at their skin color.
My closing statement is just Mohammed.
Oh no. Just look at this guy's name. Yasser Arafat. What?
What?
Might as well be Barack Hussein Obama.
Oh my god, I can't. This story makes me sick. Thank you for sharing it, but like also this is not okay. And it's, man, it makes me want to tear at my skin a little. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because it's like, it's so we have the evidence. And like, it's not just one person. Yeah. And yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. This article, like the Times article was written as sort of like this like bombshell investigation that like everybody, and there's countless articles.
Doesn't do bombshell.
Yeah. All these other articles are like, the New York Times has reported that this happened and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, all of them conclude like, but like, there's no proof. Yeah. And everybody's dead. So who fucking cares?
That's so disturbing.
It's
whatever
it's
it
fucking,
takes.
It's unbelievable.
I mean,
yeah.
He won the election. And, but these are people's real people. It's,
I know. And just like,
so
the
disturbing.
Idea that he then gets to turn around and claim like that it's his success that these people got to come home in the first place.
Yeah.
He and gets credit for bringing them home.
And that he didn't negotiate either. He didn't have his little minions fly to like six different countries in the Middle East and, begging.
To offer guns instead of, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to do Iran-Contra because fuck him. Like I'm so sick of this man. Wow.
Yeah, I know. I really
that's like
I do
so dastardly. I can't believe he did it, but it's like I don't understand the person that would do that. I get wanting to win, but like these people could have been killed.
Yeah.
Like Iran could have lied and said like, okay, yeah, I'll wait and then kill them all.
Yeah. The other thing too though is that like there's always this like layer of separation between him and what was being done. Like all of everything that even what Gary Sick was writing was that like, it wasn't Reagan that was doing this. It was his campaign manager, Casey, right? What was his name? William Casey, I think. But like, it wasn't Reagan. You know what I mean? It was William Casey. It wasn't Reagan who.
Acting on his own. He's letting his.
I mean, it's just like there's no proof that Reagan even knew about it, but like obviously he did. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If his campaign manager or his like trusted, the man who he's letting negotiate on his behalf.
Every scandal that ever surrounded Reagan, there's always this like layer of deniability or layer of separation between him and whoever it was getting their hands dirty.
Well, yeah. I guess that's usually what presidents do, except for like the really dumb ones, like Harding was doing all of it. Harding is just like, crime, can I do it? Y'all are doing crime.
That
me too.
Fun.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do hood rat shit with my friends.
Totally, like he. He was like in it. Thank you for sharing this, but like,
yeah,
wow, it's really dark, and it's like, it's layers of darkness because it's not just the act itself and like Reagan lying about it and coming out like the hero, but it's the media's complicity, which is, you know, we're not a stranger to media complicity, especially these days in a post-Trump world. But like, it's really,
I know the fact that like this
really
Texan
disappointing.
Barnes told this guy who's like a CEO at CNN and used to run the fucking
LA
Times, like, and he was just like, okay, cool. I'm just gonna sit on this piece of information. It's like every aspect of the story is so fucked up.
Like, yeah. I'm like, what else are you sitting on that you know about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
And like, good you're times. Not upset that people are being held? Like, I don't know if someone, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm not these men, but I couldn't imagine someone telling you that and you're not just like, what the fuck, bro? Mm-hmm. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
And like, why is no one calling for Barnes to be arrested for his involvement? That he's.
Thank you. Yes.
You know,
I was thinking,
I know
that,
he's 85
also,
years
I don't
old,
like
but
like, the carceral anything, but yeah. He's,
I mean, done America sure does though. So like, lock him up, you know?
No. I mean, yeah, but no. Yeah, you're right. Cause we love a lock him up.
Mm-hmm. But like, I didn't see anything in any of the articles that I read that ever said anything about Barnes being punished or deserving punishment. I don't know. Is there a statute of limitations on treason?
No. No, yeah, there isn't. Like,
what?
No. That has wrecked me a little bit. But
yeah.
Yeah, thank you for sharing this story. I have a lot to sit with. Good God. Yeah, that was a lot.
Sorry.
Anyways, my drink is empty.
I'm gonna let me toss
I have
back
one actually desk. I have one more sip. Now my drink is empty.
Same.
So yeah, our drinks are empty, so we are done. America's history is juicy. We just add cognac, rum, and like Cointreau and other things.
Mm-hmm. Other things. Lemon juice.
There we go. That's it. I didn't make this cocktail and I'm like, I remember some of the booze, but yeah, I remembered all the booze. I just didn't remember the non-booze.
The lemon.
The lemon. So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tuxalirazol.
Thank you to our new editor, Thomas. I don't know why I pronounced his name that way. Thomas. I gave you a weird. Please edit me to not sound crazy. Thomas. Thank you to our new editor, Thomas. We cannot do this without
natural.
Yes. It's natural.
It's natural.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
From Wigstock. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Now that we found love.
What are we going to do? With it.
I'm going to have that stuck in my head for forever.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I regret nothing. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.